Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight, on November 1st, 2018. Welcome, and we have a great show for you. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just
that. The South
that.
Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For additional information, visit their website at academyofforeignlanguages.com, that's all spelled out, or call 310-975-4133.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here in the South Bay Show. And of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I am well this morning, Joe. I was out doing the Halloween thing last night.
Yeah, I'm so glad I did not go out Uber driving last night.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. We had talked about this last week, but, you know, Halloween has just exploded. There have been events going on for 2 weeks. You know, it's not
mm-hmm.
just a one-night
mm-hmm.
thing anymore. It's been going on for 2 weeks. And so I got dressed up in a costume. I went out with my crew last night. We went to the Riviera Village trick-or-treat. Thousands of people. Thousands
yeah.
of people down there. I mean, yeah. it was amazing. So, yeah,
there's
a lot of fun.
There's something about costumes. And
yeah,
the kind of the allow the what a permission to dress up.
Yeah, you lose your inhibitions when you're in costume.
Right.
And the funny thing is, I'm saying hi to people. You don't recognize people. Nobody recognizes
right.
me. You know, you go in there, you see people like, hey, how you doing? They look at you like, huh? You know, they don't recognize you. So, yeah,
right.
so it was
right.
fun. It was good. Yeah, it was
yeah.
good. So you stayed home and gave out. You stayed home and gave out candy, I guess, huh?
We had tons of kids. A couple of our neighbors really do up their yards, and they create a whole like reception area for kids and make it really fun for the kids that are trick or treating. So we get a couple hundred kids, I think, come by.
Oh, yeah.
our neighborhood. So it's exciting and fun and safe and all of that. So we're really excited about it.
Nice. Well, I'm excited
and we
about
watched
today's
Hocus
show.
Pocus.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you got to put on a scary movie, of course. Anyway, I'm very excited about today's show because I went to the opening reception for this exhibition that we're going to be talking about today. I highly recommend that if anybody that hasn't stopped by Pacific Coast Gallery to see this exhibition, you should do so before it closes. So, shall we get to it?
We shall, Jackie. Who's our guest today?
Our guest this morning is author, record producer, and photographer, Spot. Now, back when men were stupid and women were pretty, Spot took photos, played music, recorded music, skated his ass off for the easy reader, promoted foolish conspiracies, and chased many improbable dreams. demolishing some in the process, but most of them were free. So there you go. Now, he doesn't take photos anymore, but has published the image-based books Sounds of Two Eyes Opening and the e-zine Anti-Punk Rock, A History. He just completed the multi-voice audiobook production of G.S. Goldman's Decline and Fall of Alternative Civilization. Now, Spot's photo exhibition, Ride the Wild Wheels, is currently showing at Pacific Coast Gallery in Hermosa. And the closing reception for Ride the Wild Wheels will include a panel and Q&A, and it's happening this Saturday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. The panel includes Spot, SST Records co-owner Joe Carducci, and Randy Newart from the seminal surf rock band, The Challengers. And the panel and Q&A is going to start at 8 p.m. Welcome to the program, Spot. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, I'm I'm glad I could be awake at this hour this morning. this is unusual for me, but hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
There's a different smell in the air this morning, this early.
Oh.
No,
well, don't blame me.
We're so glad to have you. The photographs are amazing, but what where were you at when you were taking your first photographs? I mean, what prompted you to get into the art of photography?
Probably Life magazine, or you know, I mean, I grew up in a family where, you know, we got Life magazine every week, and I mean, that was the heyday of the of that kind of publication, and you know, I just ate that up, you know, and you know, so I started paying more attention to, you know, serious photography, because I mean, all I had ever played with was like the little Kodak brownies, and and I figured that, and I, all of a sudden then I realized, wait a minute, you know, I'm not, my pictures don't look anywhere near as good as the stuff in Life, so what am I missing here? And you know, just got into it, and then of course when I saw the movie Blow Up, okay, that just changed everything, and you know, as far as I'm concerned.
When you talk about equipment and time, when were some of these photographs featured in the exhibit? When were the earliest of these photographs taken?
Now I think that there's one photo up there, I think, that was taken 1970, but that goes back way before, you know, I was doing anything in the South Bay. But insofar as South Bay stuff, it probably would have been about 76 at the earliest, but definitely 77. Because, I mean, see, I got my first camera in 69, right about when I, right after I got out of high school, okay, and bought my first camera there, started taking pictures, but it got stolen in 72. So, and I couldn't afford to replace it until about 76 after I had moved to Hermosa. And then got back into it, and I had started working at the Easy Reader then, writing music reviews and stuff like that. And then started taking photos to accompany them. So,
so music reviews. Tell us a little bit about that. Writing music reviews for the Easy Reader. That must have been amazing in the 70s.
I don't know if I'd call it amazing, but it was one of those things where, you know, I just kind of committed to doing something I'd never done before. And I was really dissatisfied with the music reviews that they had done, because they didn't really have a music reviewer per se. They just had various members of the staff who would write stuff, and I would notice a lot of the a lot of things that were wrong, and maybe some of the some of the things they would say about a certain person's music or whatever, you know, a lot of inaccuracies. And one day I just walked in off the street and took them to task for it and didn't realize I was insulting the person who had actually written the reviews. And then she said, well, you know, listen, I wrote those reviews. Can you do better? And, okay, I'm on the spot there. So I said, well, of course I can. So she says, okay, well, why don't you go do us this review, turn it in, and we'll see if you can. So I forget what it was, but I went out and I wrote a review, and, of course, I got a lot of things in it accurately, but there was also a whole lot of crap that I wrote in it too, that they edited out. And I learned my lesson insofar as writing, insofar as like doing any kind of journalism, is that you go directly to what happened, where it happened, who made it happen, etc. And you leave out all of the editorial, you know, stream of consciousness thoughts. And they edited the hell out of it. And that's what I really learned how to write.
That's true. Yeah, that's when you're writing, take out all the fluff, you know, keep it,
exactly,
you know, just on point what it is. I got to ask you about the music scene in Hermosa, in particular, during that time, during the mid-70s. You know, the 70s, there was all sorts of music happening in the 70s. You know, there were certain eras where there was just like one prominent type of music, you know, from way back when. You know, the 50s, you had your doo-wop and stuff, and the late 60s, you started getting a little more into the psychedelic scene, but you had the rock bands towards the end of the 70s, you had the glam rock bands, disco, and of course, punk. And here in the beach cities, we had surf music, you know. Were all of those music types being represented in the club scene down here?
I wouldn't say all of them were, but one thing about the 70s is that and Joe Carducci, he points it out in his book, Rock and the Pop Narcotic, that most people seem to look at the 60s or the 50s and the 60s as the great eras of pop music, rock music, whatever you want to call it. He points out that really the 70s, there was more going on in the 70s that was influential than had ever really happened before that. But I guess it was because of how, how FM radio kind of devolved into this, the first, classic rock format where they just said, well, let's just stick with the hits. Let's just stick with the hits. And, excuse me. And so he points that out. So yeah, there was a lot of stuff happening. And one thing I noticed is that like a lot of what the punk rock era is noted for, which is the DIY thing, the do it yourself type of productions, etc. Well, there were a lot of bands in the 70s that were kind of doing that as well. A lot of, I guess what you'd call hippie bands, were putting out their own records. I mean, you know, anyone could do it back then. It was just harder and cost you more, but they didn't have, they didn't have anybody to support them and kind of get the name out, get their product out. It was still an uphill climb, but something in the late 70s when the punk rock thing happened, or new wave, whichever you want to call it, then it was a little bit more accepted, or maybe I should say recognized. Okay, recognize is a better word here. So there was a lot going on that people weren't aware of. there was one album I did with this one band. That was Yellow Autumn. They were kind of I guess what you'd call a hippie type folkish band, whichever. They recorded an album up in Media Art, which I, was one of the engineers on, and they released it themselves. And, I completely forgot about it since then. And maybe about within the past 10 years, somehow it surfaced as a collectible, and someone contacted me. What do you know about this? And I had completely forgotten about it, and there it was, bam. One of those bands got someplace that made people pay attention.
Well, what's interesting is kids today, the last generation, they don't realize that back in the day, AM and FM radio, and AM was only played a certain type of music. They played your pop music. You weren't going to hear Led Zeppelin on AM. And then you had FM. And FM played, Led Zeppelin and other bands that you weren't going to hear on AM. And then there were, like, the college stations, which would play alternative. They'd get into what we could call now alternative music. But kids today don't know that. They have music coming at them from every direction. They don't have any limits. But back in the day, we had limits as to what kind of music we could listen to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I remember that too. I mean, at least in the 60s, there was some really good AM radio, and it didn't try to just have one style of music, it was a golden era of pop music, because everything that you heard was really good. I mean, you could go from the Supremes and Johnny Cash to, the early Beatles to, there were a lot of things happening that just everything, jazz, I mean, take five, they were playing Take Five, Louis Armstrong, Hello Dolly, there was a lot of great stuff then. And then even going into the 60s, I remember like around, 66, 67, AM radio started playing album cuts, which was unheard of. And it would be maybe on like the late night shows, maybe after midnight or around there. But it laid the blueprint for that first FM rock that started happening, I guess, in late 67. When, what was it? It was KPPC out of Pasadena. I think that was a station. They were the first FM rock experiment, completely freeform. Loved it.
Excellent.
We're learning so much, Spot. This is awesome. I'm a technology guy, and so I'm really interested in your thoughts. I mean, I don't want to stop the vibe here that we've got going, but I want to find out about your equipment. I mean, what was your favorite camera from the 70s?
Oh. Well, I started off on a Pentax, 35mm, single lens reflex. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what I knew. And the old Pentaxes, they might not have been as good as a Nikon or something like that, but they were good cameras, and you know, you could pretty much get any kind of lens for it that you wanted at one point. So yeah, that's what I started off on, but eventually got a Nikon, and I traded a guitar for a Nikon. And
okay.
I had gotten an Ovation acoustic guitar. It's actually the same one in that that photo of me jumping off the ramp, and I traded it with one of the engineers for the for a Nikon. Bam.
Okay.
Joe has not seen the exhibit yet. I did send him a bunch of pictures to put up on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
But what I love about it is that you so captured the scene happening in Hermosa at that time. And so were you just hanging out on the Strand or on Pier Avenue and you always had your camera with you, or was it more you went out to specifically get those photos?
I'd say mostly I was just there and looking for something to do. But you know, after a while I would start, going after specific things, or that's just kind of how my life, I was just taking pictures of where my life had progressed at that point. I guess when I got that second camera in, let's say, 76, you know, I'm not sure. I might have all just been interested in just taking various, music shots, some of the music reviews I was doing or whatever. But the good thing I had was the studio, Media Art, had a dark room built into it. And see, the two guys who opened the place, who started the place, they were both commercial photographers, and that's kind of how they got a lot of the equipment. Was they made deals with various people to do do photos of things they needed for advertisements or promotion, to sell pieces of gear, whatever, and also had been doing things where they were hired by corporate entities for conventions and that. So they'd work out deals so that they could get the studio up. So, you know, they went through a thing where they didn't owe anyone any money for the equipment, but they worked it out there. But they also, they had a dark room up there. They built a really good black and white dark room, and I just went in and just used it all the time. The deal they made with me on that is, well, you can use it whenever you want, but you have to buy your own chemicals. And I said, no problem. So I just went for it. I spent tons of hours and days and weeks in that place. Oh boy.
Where was Media Arts located?
It was, the address was 111 Pier Avenue. So it was right on the corner of Pier and Hermosa upstairs. There's
it's next to Abigail, right? Or
well, around
it's
the
in that corner
from there.
Around the corner.
It's around the corner. It's right down. I remember at that time there was a restaurant on the first floor. Got Shenanigans, I think it might have been called. And we were upstairs, just directly above it. And I have no idea what's up there now. No idea at all.
Yeah, if you did you do Adam Malavani's walking tour by any chance of Hermosa?
Yeah.
Have you done that yet? Yeah, I did it, and you walk by, and on the audio tour, it tells you about it. So I know exactly what you're talking about. You stand from the building, and he gives a little history of what went on there. So that was that where? Well, you also took pictures at the church, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know that when I think about it, I'm not exactly sure how when the first time I went there was. Oh well, I take that back now. There were a lot of the local artists, guys like Emil Donato, I think is. And he, I think maybe Gary Kazanjian may have had a space there, but there were a number of local. Oh, Dave DeBruzzi, he did really primitive type metal sculpture, and you know I used to run into him various places around town, you know, and after I moved to Hermosa, eventually I got to be friends with some of these people, so I was probably going over to the church just to see some of the stuff they did. I think I took some photos of some of their work. In fact, yes, I did take some photos of some of their work. I don't know why I'm saying I think when I actually did do this. no one's ever asked me that question before, so I have to make sure I'm saying the right thing. And then eventually, you know, some of the punk rockers were there, and I met them. You know, they invited me over, and then there were like these two different groups of people, two different cultures, taking the space. So it was. I guess I would say more than likely it was. I started going over there before I ever had the camera again. So.
Joe, there was an old Baptist church. I guess was it on Hermosa Avenue, or I think it was Hermosa Avenue, but it was an old Baptist church that wasn't being used as a church anymore, and whoever I guess on the building was renting out space in it. And I had, you know, from that walking tour I took, I learned a little bit about it. So they had space, and there were some artists that were using it, and then a couple of these local bands were using it to practice and record, and some people were actually living in it for a while.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were a lot of people living in it actually. It was actually on Manhattan Avenue.
Isn't
it where the old when I say it's not there anymore, market was the drive-through market? Is that where the church was?
No, that was across from the church. The market you're talking about, yeah, the Altadena Dairy. And of course, what's in that place, that space right now, is the Pacific Coast Gallery. Right on top of where that market used to be.
Right.
Which now across the way is the Abigail place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, just if you know where Java Man, the coffee house is, it's like just to the right of it, as you're standing there looking at it from the front, was the parking lot that doesn't exist anymore, and then there would have been the church.
Right.
Wow.
I hope that makes sense.
I can picture it. Sure. That walking tour helps a lot. How about we do a quick station break?
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're getting some amazing history and some amazing information about Hermosa and the South Bay back in the day. And we're talking with Spot, award-winning photographer and record producer, author, and we're thrilled to talk with him, and we're going to talk with him some more, and we're going to talk about all kinds of things. We're going to talk about Rock and the Pop Narcotic, a great book by Joe Carducci. We're going to talk about Yellow Autumn, one of their great albums, Children of the Mist. And we're going to talk about lots of different things. Children of the Mist.
Okay, well, you know, at least you know the title of that thing.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, Spot, you have to realize that Joe is sitting in front of four different computers right now, and he's Googling everything that you're mentioning. So that's his MO. That's his MO.
Well, good. At least I didn't give you false information.
No. And speaking of that, Blow Up, the movie Blow Up, Blow-Up, from 1966, is considered by many critics to be the best film of 1966. It's got 48,000 reviews on IMDb, and it looks pretty amazing. Blow Up,
who was
1966.
In it?
Check it out. The actors are... Lead actor Vanessa Redgrave, Sarah Miles, and David Hemmings are the lead actors. John Castle, and but Vanessa Redgrave is the lead actor, and it sounds awesome. It sounds amazing.
I've never seen this. I have to see this now. I'm gonna have to pull it up and watch it.
I'm going to read the storyline. It's really cool. It's just a paragraph. A successful mod photographer in London. World is bounded by fashion, pop music, marijuana, and easy sex, feels his life is boring and despairing. Then he meets a mysterious beauty. I assume that's Vanessa Redgrave. And also notices something frightfully suspicious on one of his photographs of her taken in a park. The fact that he may have photographed a murder does not occur to him until he studies and then blows up the negatives, uncovering details, blowing up smaller and smaller elements, and finally putting the puzzle together. What a great, you know, idea for a movie. Awesome. A mystery.
And, of course, everything in London in the 60s was mod. I love that. A mod photographer. Mod.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I recommend the movie highly.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously got top reviews. So Spot, what is the state? I have this general theme in my head, in my mind. You talked a little bit about how people thought or think of the 60s as the be-all, end-all period of music. And you said, well, the 60s may have begun it, but the 70s is really where the experimentation took flight and really, really accomplished a lot of things. The greatest albums, for instance, my favorite band, the greatest albums of Led Zeppelin were 70s albums, early 70s, which were just amazingly creative and lasting time. So what do you think about today? Spot, where do music or musicians go today when they have this book of work behind them that's hard to overcome? I mean, if you're a musician today, how do you not sound like a band that people already know from 20, 30, 40 years ago?
Burn your instrument.
Isn't it hard today?
I don't know. I really don't know. I'm probably not the person to ask about this because I generally fell out of live performance and playing shows roughly about 8 years ago. So I mean, I don't even think in those terms anymore. And I just know that there's a glut of new bands, new music, et cetera. And frankly, I lost the energy to keep up with all of that stuff a long time ago. So I just let it be what it is. And occasionally something comes out of it that, you know, that I notice and, you know, maybe listen to, but it has nothing to do with what's popular. Absolutely nothing to do with that. The only radio I can listen to these days is Freeform. You know, I mean, I went through the whole, you know, NPR period, which was great, you know, but then I got a little bored with it, and just started listening to, you know, with the internet, radio stations are streaming all the time. You can listen to any station anywhere in the country, pretty much, you know, like just on iTunes and that, you know. And I've found there's maybe about five or six stations that, you know, I have stored on the computer, and that's what I'll listen to, you know, one of them being, you know, KXLU from Loyola Marymount. They're still, you know, they're still holding up. And WFMU in New York, and you know, pop radio is, I can't handle it. It's not my bag.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get that. It's actually a little overwhelming. I find the whole music scene a little bit overwhelming these days. Just because there's so much coming at you from there's pros and there's cons. The good thing is that today record companies aren't controlling everything. You know, it seems that most of the record industry is just, you know, completely changed. They don't have the stranglehold on the reins of music anymore. With the internet, people can, you know, do their own thing. You know, there's a lot of people out there doing their thing. They're putting their phone in front of it. They're recording it. They're putting it up on YouTube. You know, that's a good thing. For me, as I said, it can be a little overwhelming. And when it gets like that, I fall back to, because I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, and I'll fall back to those stations that play that music from those decades. But Joe, you know, every decade, there's always at least one or two different music. You know, grunge came out in the 90s. There was a lot of good music there. It was a whole different form, you know. There are actually still some people, you know, back in the day there were concept albums, you know, and these bands would do these concept albums where you would listen to the whole side, you know, and then flip it over and then listen. You had to listen to it in total to really get it. But there are still a couple of artists out there doing those, you know, new artists too, you know, like Adele. You know, she does these 21, 25, you know, and they're a little bit of a concept album. That they're not out there, you know, like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. But yeah, it can, I find it a little overwhelming sometimes.
Well, you're very generous. What do you think, Spot?
Well, there has to be. Something from somewhere that holds water, you know. I can't say who they are because I don't really pay much attention to any of it. You know, most of the people who are really well known these days, I don't know their music. You know, you could say Taylor Swift to me, and I'd say, okay, I know what she looks like. But I've never listened to her music or anything like that. I mean, if something comes up that's good to listen to, I'm going to listen to it. I'm not going to walk away from it. And I'll tell you, it was really funny. Some maybe 9-10 months ago, I was hanging out at this coffee house where I know all the crew and everybody, and a lot of after hours hanging out there. And I was talking to one of the kids there, maybe about mid-20s or something, and somehow the subject of Kanye West came up. And I didn't have – all I knew about him was his personality, his media personality, which just doesn't – it really turns me off. And I said something about him, and the kid says, well, he's really a genius. You really should pay attention to him. And okay, well, whatever. But he turned me on to one song that he had done recently I realized that, hey, wait a minute. When I listened to the song, there was actually something there musically. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to just diss the guy offhand anymore. I'm going to consider him that, yeah, maybe he did something that whether you like it or not, it had some substance to it. The video that was attached to it was a piece of crap, but the song was actually worth listening to. But it's like stuff like that's gonna come out. Who knows where it's gonna come out? And I don't know. I actually, my opinion right now is that I kind of think that a lot of what we're everybody's looking for the next big thing, the big thing that's going to bust out. I honestly think it's not going to happen in Western music. I think that the Western music as a dominant art form has had its day, and where it's going to happen is either in from an Asian culture or Middle East culture, because those are the ones that are really struggling with something that it's life threatening. And we're really not. I mean, not in the same sense that you have a government that's out to kill the people. We have a government that just talks about it. But I'm not going to get into that.
During the Vietnam War, during that era, I mean, a ton of music, came out. Because of that, that was a reaction to what was going on with our country at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Peace.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Make love, not war. Make love, not war. This is a very, very pregnant, beautiful line of questioning. I mean, is the best music of the next period going to come from places that are and the best movies potentially and the best books going to come from places that are, the scenes of war and famine and things like that?
Yeah, I think that it's all the possibilities are there for that to happen. I mean, blues, I mean, like if you just look at America, blues music happened out of a culture that was pretty downtrodden and taken advantage of and, considered below what a culture should be. The same happened actually with country music and with rock and roll.
Absolutely.
They all developed out of very poor people who were struggling to not be poor anymore. And but nowadays, everything seems to be coming out of people who have it easy. You know, they can easily put out a record, and suddenly they're these, you know, they're these big names. So
right.
when a culture starts doing that, featuring things that are based on just image and on, well, let's say, you know, advantageous money flows, that's a signal that that's pretty much the end of that approach of that culture artistically. You know, not that it's not going to be there, but it's going to come out of some other place that we have no control over, but it's something is going to happen that's going to get the attention of people completely off our shores, but we're going to have to suddenly compete with it, and I don't think we're in a position to do that anymore. So we'll see.
Right.
You know, that's very interesting. When you were just mentioning the blues, I was thinking of I don't know what you call it, that it's making a big comeback now, like Americana, like from out of the hollers of
right.
of you know, West Virginia and Kentucky. What is that form of music called? You know, there's generally an upright
bluegrass?
Bass. Bluegrass, not folk, but you're right.
I know that you know, the term Americana, or let me say what, or alt country, whatever.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. There's too many categories out there, and some of them kind of don't really mean much. But I don't know. No,
the music from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Music.
Right.
I don't know
right.
what it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that music. But again, a poor society, poor communities, you know, when you don't have any money, you know, sitting around and making music with, you know, homemade instruments or storytelling it's your form of entertainment, you know. But, you know, before,
right.
think about it, before TV, before radio, that's how people,
right.
That was your entertainment.
Yeah, I think
storytelling.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just the storytelling is honest. The storytelling is human and universal. When that's true, then you have a great song.
Mm-hmm.
Spot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you know, one thing that I think maybe people don't consider as much as they should is that, you know, when the country. Well, when America was being developed, it was being developed off of a number of different types of culture came over here, you know, whether they were forced over here or if they, you know, just came over here because they could, you know, for whatever reason. And somehow they all had to live with each other in a way that, you know, they could survive. And even if you look at things like slavery, where, you know, you had, you know, one culture that is forced to supply the needs of another culture on a plantation or something. Well, nobody ever got rid of their music or their instruments. I mean, the Germans, they brought over accordions. God forbid. And then, you know, Africans brought over the banjo. And in both cases, they turned into new instruments that did new things. And I'm convinced that you probably had more people on a farm or plantation who everybody had to at some point get off by themselves and just relax and play some music, you know, just so they felt like, okay, I can at least be happy in this moment. And eventually somebody from the other culture said, well, hey, mind if I bring my accordion here and see if I can play with you? Because, hey, musicians want to play. They want to play with each other. And I think there was a lot of that going on. And you know, I think that, you know, blues and country developed out of both of those things. So
throw in a bagpipe and a washboard and you've just got it, right? There you go.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It was kind of like in America, it was where we got rid of all the classical rules, you know. Hey, classical music is great. Don't get me wrong, but
people didn't have the money to buy a piano. People didn't have the money to buy, a violin.
Exactly. And a lot of the music developed in the upper classes, people who either had the money, had the music, or they could find the talented people and support them. You know, give them not grants. What is it? Commissions.
They had patrons.
Exactly. And I think maybe one person who kind of knocked down that wall might have been William Shakespeare, because if you ever listen to people talk about, oh, what's proper English and such.
Right.
You know, there is no such thing as proper English. I mean, Shakespeare, who people say, oh, you if you don't study Shakespeare, you don't know English. Well, Shakespeare, he just completely screwed up. He completely went against all of the rules of language and English with his work. And
he invented his own language.
Yeah. The thing is, he knew his audience. He knew the people who would go to these plays, and he knew they wanted to be entertained, so he would write in language that they could understand and say, my God, I know what he's talking about. And they would shut up and pay attention. So, yeah, I mean, he was that's what I'm throwing out as an example there.
Yeah, right. It's another one. Yeah. Wow. This has been a great conversation. We're talking about a lot of different things, but what we want to mention again, the closing reception for Ride the Wild Wheels is going to happen this Saturday, November 3rd. Starts at 7 p.m. The panel is going to include our guest spot, Joe Carducci and Randy Newart. And the panel and the Q&A is going to start at 8 p.m. Now, as I mentioned, I've gone to the exhibit. It's fantastic. You get a real insider's look at what the Hermosa Beach scene was in the 70s. It looks so innocent, you know.
Yeah.
It looks so innocent. Spot has covered not just the local music scene, but the skate scene, the skateboards, and the roller skaters.
Jackie.
Yes.
I have something I have to play. It's only a minute and 25 seconds. Can we do that?
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Hold on.
Take a look across the street at that building on the right.
That used to be Altadena Drive-Thru Dairy, where I worked when I was 15 years old.
Now take a look at your phone. On the right side of the photo is the dairy. On the left side of the photo is a big mission-looking building.
That's why I took the job. The band Black Flag lived and practiced there, and I watched that door every day, hoping to see Keith Morris or maybe Greg Ginn walking out with his guitar.
It was built in 1924 as a Baptist church, but by the 70s, it was kind of falling apart, like a lot of Hermosa. They started renting little areas of the church out to artists, because Hermosa in the 70s was still very bohemian. And that goes pretty well, until these damn punk rockers come and mess everything up. That would be me and my friends. One of those friends was Keith Morris, who moved into the church in 1978. Remember Keith?
Hello, people. I'm Keith Morris. I was the first vocalist and founding member of Black Flag and the Circle Jerks. The Circle Jerks were born out of the basement of the church. I think I lived there for maybe 10 months.
Let's get a closer look.
That would be Adam Malavani's walking tour of Hermosa Beach. Experience GPS tours, I believe it's called. So if you haven't done it yet, you can download it and do it. It's very well done. Highly recommended.
Yeah.
It definitely turned out better than I expected it to turn out, because I didn't know how it would turn out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was terrific. I knew a little bit about that there was a scene in Hermosa back then, but I didn't know. I learned a lot on it, and it was very, very interesting. I thought it was very, very well done. Tell us a little bit about what people can expect Saturday night spot at this event. And that's the closing reception, too. So it's going to be your last chance to see the exhibit.
Right. Well, the Q&A thing, the panel, we're going to kind of talk about how certain types of music came out of Hermosa, or at least were that was a major part of what was happening in Hermosa. Some folks there, they did a documentary called Jazz versus Punk, talking about how jazz and like post-war jazz and then eventually punk rock became music that was they were definitely something that happened there that was became very influential. But it's going to be like myself and Joe Carducci. He's a big film fan, and he has a lot of information about film and then how various types of music developed around the whole country in that. But like Randy Noart, he's going to be, he was with the Challengers, and they played at the old Biltmore Hotel before it was torn down in the early 60s with, people like the Beach Boys and that, before anyone even knew who they were. But also, I have to throw in here that you've mentioned the three of us that I just told you about, but we're also going to have a fourth person on that panel, I believe, and that's Gloria Cadena, who was married to Ozzy Cadena, who was booking all the music at the Lighthouse back in back in the day. I mean, he moved to Hermosa in I think it was the early 70s. Opened a record store, and that didn't really work out for him, but he got involved with the Lighthouse because he was producing great jazz albums with some of the best players you can imagine, Thelonious Monk, Charlie Parker, it goes on and on. Well, Gloria, she's still booking jazz at the Lighthouse, and she's in her early 90s now. And she's also the mother of Des Cadena, who was in Red Cross, Black Flag, and lately The Misfits. So there's all these connections that we're going to be talking about in that.
Right.
I love this.
Wow. This spot, is this Joe Carducci, the same author of Rock and the Pop Narcotic?
Same person.
Whoa. We get to meet him on Saturday. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to come to this event. This is going to be this is South Bay history. of in a way that affects world history of pop music and punk music, and it's just amazing. You have to come. Spot, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it was it made it pleasurable to wake up.
That's all you can all say. Right. It's a pleasure to wake up today.
We appreciate you getting up early to do this with us. One more time this Saturday, November 3rd at 7 p.m., head over to the Pacific Coast Gallery in Hermosa Beach for the closing reception and a panel and Q&A for Ride the Wild Wheels. See all of Spot's fantastic photos and learn a little bit about Hermosa history.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Share this with your friends and family, and let's get a good turnout Saturday at the reception and the panel. Thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you tomorrow, or actually, we're going to have a great show tomorrow. We're going to play the 2018 California Propositions Review by Richard Montgomery, City Councilman for Manhattan Beach. And is it Diane Wallace?
Diane Wallace, yes.
Diane Wallace from the League of Women Voters. So if you want to know what the propositions are about, tune in tomorrow. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.